So I reviewed very carefully the hearing proceedings and the weight of the evidence presented to me at the hearing.
And that is Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows speaking with my colleague Scott Detrow earlier this year.
In Maine, under our election laws, the only recourse for the voters seeking to challenge Mr. Trump's qualifications was to bring that challenge to the Secretary of State, to me, and I was required to do my job to hold a hearing to review the evidence and issue a decision. And that begins the process in our state.
Bellows was discussing her decision to remove former President Trump from Maine's 2024 Republican primary ballot. Maine voters had challenged his name on the ballot based on the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment, a post-Civil War law. It states that people who engaged in insurrection or rebellion should be disqualified from office.
And that evidence made clear, first, that those events of January 6, 2021, and we all witnessed them, they were unprecedented. They were tragic. But they were an attack not only upon the Capitol and government officials, but also an attack on the rule of law, on the peaceful transfer of power.
The decision in Maine and also Colorado were both challenged by the Trump campaign, challenges that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Do you think the U.S. Supreme Court needs to take this question up?
We would certainly welcome the United States Supreme Court to make this clear.
And this morning, the Supreme Court did make it clear.
We come on the air with breaking news from the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court has just handed down an historic ruling concerning Colorado.
Former President Donald Trump can appear on the 2024 ballot, overturning.
In a unanimous decision, the High Court put Trump back on the ballot in Colorado and ruled that individual states cannot bar candidates for federal office based on the 14th Amendment. Now, this case over state ballots is one of many swirling around the former president. The Supreme Court is also considering whether Trump has immunity from criminal prosecution, which matters because he is facing a total of 91 criminal charges. They include a federal election interference case, a Georgia election interference case, a case over his handling of classified documents, and a hush money case. All of them, with the exception of the hush money case, have been beset by delays and challenges pushing back the timelines of when they'll be adjudicated. Consider this. As the clock ticks towards November 5th, Election Day, it is increasingly looking like the many legal cases focused on former President Trump may tip his way or remain unresolved. What impact will this have on Trump's campaign for a second term in the White House? From NPR, I'm Mary Louise Kelly. It is Monday, March 4th.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
It's Consider This from NPR. Former President Donald Trump scored a legal victory today. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that the likely Republican nominee for president should be restored to the ballot in Colorado. And the decision says individual states cannot bar candidates for federal office under the Insurrection Clause. So, a legal victory, also a political victory. And who better to walk through the state of Trump's legal and political challenges than NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro. I talked to him about today's decision and the implications going forward.
Bottom line is it means he's going to be on the ballot, you know, first for Super Tuesday tomorrow, which might be the biggest implication because he can acquire delegates from those states. In the general election, it's a little bit less so, you know, just from a number standpoint, because the places where they were considering kicking him off were mostly blue states. Colorado, you know, used to be a swing state, but has trended much more left in the past two decades. Mm-hmm. At most, it likely could mean missing out on one delegate in a congressional district in Maine, someplace he won in 2016. And of course, every electoral vote matters when elections are this close. But more broadly, this is a big win for Trump because it's further proof that any remedy for those who want to keep Trump out of the White House is clear that it's not going to go through the courts, but it's going to have to rest in the hands of voters.
Okay, well, I'm going to step back and just tick through these cases. With the exception of the hush money case, the Stormy Daniels case, all of the prosecutors who have taken on Trump in court seem to be running into delays, into challenges. Start with the Georgia case. This is the election interference case. It has had issues that boil down to allegations of misconduct against the lead prosecutor.
Yeah, and there's a pending decision in that case about whether DA Fannie Willis can continue on in the case. And that's really crucial here because if she's kicked off, it's really unlikely that this case is going to go to trial before Election Day, if it takes place at all. And this was one of the strongest cases against Trump, because he had been caught on tape saying that he wanted elections officials there to find votes for him. But if Fannie Willis is not kicked off, what I think all the attention that her ethics hearing received and teaches us, you know, was playing out on cable TV for hours because cameras are allowed in the courtroom. What it teaches us is that a Trump trial in Georgia would play out like kind of like an O.J. Simpson style trial during the heart of a general election. Again, if the timing works out. Now, I don't think that Willis will be cowed also, by the way, by questions of whether it's appropriate to hold a trial that close to an election, considering how the Trump team has gone after her. But this is a sprawling case, and the timing could be tight to see if it happens before the general election at all.
Let's scoot south to Florida, where we have the classified documents case, and where I gather even prosecutors are now hoping to push things back. They're asking for a delay to July. Why?
Yeah, I think they would have rather kept it earlier, but there's just been reams and reams of motions filed by Trump's defense team that have really gummed up the system. You know, they've ranged from wanting more of the classified material to outright wanting the case dismissed. Trump's team has succeeded in delaying this case and others, which is a huge part of the strategy from Trump's team because they want all of this punted until after the election. The prosecution now proposes July 8th. Trump's team wants it pushed back even further than that until after the election, but said that if the judge in this case, the Trump-appointed judge Eileen Cannon, doesn't want to do that, they proposed August 12th. So we could see a trial in this case before the election, but Cannon has been far more friendly toward Trump's team than any of the other judges in any of the other cases, and they're all having to coordinate each other's calendars. So when one of these cases gets pushed off, there's a domino effect.
Okay. Which brings us to the January 6th case, the federal January 6th case. Where does that stand?
Yeah, and this one's tied up in the Supreme Court, and the speed with which the Supreme Court chooses to act is really going to determine whether this case gets heard at all before the election. And right now, the court does not really want to appear to be moving all that quickly on this.
Right. That's a separate issue from the ruling we got today, but also before the Supreme Court, and it is to do with immunity. Remind us.
Right. And the court did move pretty quickly on this 14th Amendment case, but the immunity case, really not that much. You know, the Supreme Court decided to take up the question of whether a former president can be tried for actions taken while president. The lower court, with Democratic and Republican-appointed judges, unanimously and forcefully rejected the idea that essentially a president is above the law. Because of that, a lot of people really thought that the Supreme Court wasn't going to take up this question, but it surprised some people and did. And it didn't schedule oral arguments in this case until the week of April 22nd. That really enraged a lot of people who want to see a trial before the election in this really fundamental case. Now, whether that happens at all really is in the court's hands. You know, the court could move quickly here, like it did in U.S. v. Nixon. Back then, it issued its decision in just 3 weeks. If it were to do that in this case, there could be a verdict with days to spare until Election Day. But if the court issues its decision in June at the very end of this term, which is what it essentially does or usually does with these kinds of big cases, any verdict would come after the election because of the original timeline that was set up by the federal judge in this case.
I mean, do we know why this immunity issue seems so central? Why are they not taking it up until April 22nd, late April?
The Supreme Court is traditionally very mercurial, and we haven't heard anything from the justices on why they're doing this in this order versus, for example, what they did so quickly with the 14th Amendment case. I can only presume that because Colorado votes in the primary on Super Tuesday, March 5th, that
tomorrow,
they felt like
yep.
they had to get this done much more quickly than that, which, you know, the Supreme Court knows that the election isn't until November. But the Trump team, in filing these kinds of delays, if the Supreme Court does, you know, issue its decision very quickly in 3 weeks or so, and you wind up with this trial right in the middle of the general election, that really could mean that the Trump team kind of shot itself in the foot because they really don't want a trial like this right in the heart of a general election, because general election voters view his conduct very differently.
Domenico, so many moving parts here, but let me try to land us on something resembling the big picture, because I just keep thinking when this whole election cycle started, it seemed entirely possible we might be watching Trump running his campaign from a courtroom or running it from behind bars. Is that now looking less likely than it was a few months ago?
Well, it's certainly looking a lot less likely than it did several months ago. You know, these indictments were brought last year. What Trump's team has tried to do repeatedly is dismiss, delay, distract, and they've gotten very good at being able to delay these cases, push them off and push them off, and hoping to push them over the election cliff, really, after the election on November 5th, try to get it beyond that date. But there's the other possibility that they are going to run this roulette wheel and wind up having one or three of these cases, major cases, right in the middle, in the heart of a general election. And if that were to happen, we know that a general election audience views Trump's conduct very differently than Republican voters who were giving him so much money in the primary and really helping him to the nomination if he gets there.
That was NPR's Domenico Montanaro. This episode was produced by Jordan Marie Smith and Brianna Scott. It was edited by Courtney Dorning and Dana Farrington. Our executive producer is Sammy Yenigan. It's Consider This from NPR. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Washington Wise. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how it may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.